Evil beware, we have waffles.
Alright, this is Pure Decking for Thursday, September the 29th, 2016. This is the show about things that interest me, like our current police state, information security, and Windows Update completely fucking up the broadcast box yet again. Hopefully nobody heard that badly filtered going out there, and it was just on the, I think it was just on the queue output, but, yeah, that was fantastic. Yeah, you know, I love it when the theme song sounds like it's coming through one of those string cup telephones. Anyways, I knew exactly what it was. It's the noise filtering. So that sound card thinks it's got a microphone plugged into it because I've got it hooked to TeamSpeak, and that was the easiest way to get it to work. And the Realtek settings by default have all these enhancements, and one of them is background noise filtering. Well, music just makes it flip the hell out, and it just starts raising this filter. So it's just, it makes it sound like ass in our headphones. I'm pretty sure the recording and what actually gets broadcast is clean, but what we hear sounds like crap, so it's just like, damn it. Anyways, Madman, are you a stepped out to have his inaugural smoke before things start getting too hot for him? I have a flask of Devil's Cut, and I do mean a full flask. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking Sam Adams Bonfire Blonde.
I don't know that one.
Kind of, you know how Guinness did a blonde that's kind of a stout but lighter? It's their answer to that.
Huh. I wish I could remember the name of the beer I had in Louisville last weekend. Some German name. That it was a stout, but it wasn't overly hopped, so it wasn't like stupid bitter. It was actually pretty smooth. I don't remember what the hell it was called.
That's one problem with a lot of microbrews, at least in the States. They've decided hop could answer for everything, and stouts aren't supposed to be overly hopped. They're a balanced beer. Now, if you're getting an imperial anything, that just means hopped.
Oh, yeah.
But just a normal stout, it's actually more balanced or even slightly more grainy than other beers.
It was on the grainier side. It was really good. They were calling it a Jimmy at the bar, but that's not what its name was. It had this German name, and I wish I'd written it down because I ended up really liking that beer. My dad looked at it, and I said, "Here, you want to try some?" He said, "No." It's, you know, jet black, right? Thought I was drinking ink or something. I don't know. I thought it was pretty good.
Nothing wrong with Indian ink.
Well, you know. Anyways, though, are you? How was the cigarette?
Very good. Not for my health, but in terms of craving, solved.
Hey, there you go. Drinking anything interesting?
Just Detroit water. That's one of the finest bottles. Yeah, it's great. It goes great with the nicotine and all the other carbon monoxide crap that is sucked down. But why not? It makes just as much sense as smoking, kids.
I wonder if you could tap filter water. The water. I wonder if you could filter the tap water in Detroit and sell off the minerals.
Actually, that's not a bad. That's up there with that guy who went mining for platinum on the highway.
Yeah.
That's up there with that crazy idea, man. You want to throw that at him, see if he can do it. See how many heavy metals he can pull out of a couple of gallons of water.
Here, go make a battery.
Can't
battery
we make
and amateur pharmaceuticals. Wait a minute.
Today we're going to be making battery acid and crystal meth.
At the same time.
Time.
Oh, shit. I think I already threw the link out. So, discussion topic for tonight. Private Internet Access has a fun blog post here. New research put out by the Associated Press has revealed systemic police misuse of access to confidential and private information. The AP sent out FOIA requests to police departments across the United States Oh, for anybody who's not in the United States, FOIA is Freedom of Information Act. Request departments across the United States to find out about police misuse of state and federal databases related to a report with the findings from earlier this week. Police in jurisdictions across the country were found to be routinely misusing and abusing their access to state driver's databases and federal criminal history databases. What's more egregious than the actual misuse of the confidential information is the fact that few officers are ever punished if they're caught. In Denver, it was found that 10 years of police database misuse, or out of 10 years, only 25 officers were ever disciplined. In fact, the misuse doesn't even stop at uniformed and badged employees. AP research shows that other government employees, including civilian contractors, have also been caught abusing their access. The concept of crooked government employee, whether wearing a badge or not, being home addresses and vehicle registration information to bounty hunters and private investigators is so prevalent that it's a regular feature on Hollywood TV shows. The number of illegal and unwarranted queries to the NCIC and state databases is believed to be vastly underreported. Some law enforcement agencies even responded to AP investigation by stating they do not keep track of those numbers. In Minnesota, during the fiscal year of 2012, the number was estimated by a government auditor to be up to half of all law enforcement requests to the DMV database. In one instance, a Florida highway trooper, Donna Watts, filed lawsuits alleging that several Miami-Dade police officers used their online access to state databases to find her address and harass her in retaliation for arresting Miami-Dade officers for speeding. What? You're wrong team there, lady. Don't you know cops don't arrest other cops?
Yeah, they get a pass when it comes to speeding or shooting people.
I mean, it's got to be up there with some, you know, serious level shit. And you need explosions and an Australian guy and a black guy to arrest another cop. So, back across the country, a Minnesota officer was rewarded over $1 million in settlements from taxpayer money after filing lawsuits against several agencies for snooping on her driver's license information. Major Christopher Carruthers from Miami's Professional Compliance Bureau told the AP that new measures have been placed to stamp out rampant database misuse. Bullshit. So, pretty much what's going on here is people who have access to these databases are using it. I mean, and I'm actually not surprised at all by the whole we don't keep track of those numbers, because it's, you know, somebody sitting there doing, how do you know if they're doing their job or just checking up on an old girlfriend?
Without investigating them? Unless they admit to it, you really don't.
Yeah.
You're looking for Susan Smith. Knows if Susan Smith is giving you head, or if you're actually tracking her down to serve her subpoena papers or a warrant.
Or, you know, any other number of things that they would legitimately be looking up. So, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I honestly don't know how you track this, because this is classic network security insider threat. These people have legitimate access to this data to do their jobs. So the fact that they're abusing that access...
Solve the problem, though, is you crush those who are abusing their access in this way.
To catch them.
Apparently,
I mean, they have some numbers. That's people giving up. I mean, that's people saying, oh yeah, I got caught. That's going to stop real quick the moment people start getting fired.
Yeah. But you can whittle it down. I don't think you can ever stop it. But if we have numbers saying 50% of the requests were fraudulent, they had to come to that conclusion somehow. So that's 50% of people getting fired, or possibly even jailed or fined or whatever.
What do you think, Oryu?
I'm 50-50 here. I don't really know what to think. On the one hand, I understand it's a gross abuse of an overreach of power. On the other hand, I'm with Madman there of, like, how do you actually know whether it's, I'm looking up Sarah Smith, or, you know, to get head from, or to arrest for solicitation?
I mean, you'd have to go back and audit each case and then look at their database lookups and...
Yeah, are we talking about stacking on another level of bureaucracy to hinder the thin line of the cops in their job, or do we just trust in the authority enough to go without having to have oversight? You know, have they shown has it come out to the point of the abuse is really prevalent and it's affecting the actual community? Or is it just one or two he said, she said cases?
Well, with the stat of 50%, it's definitely prevalent. And the one case they cited that we can actually discuss, the female officer that was getting harassed because she was enforcing the law against a cop, that is affecting her personal life and actually shows police corruption. That's not only are they abusing their access to get information, but they're then targeting someone who was legally doing their job because they didn't like being held to the same standards they are being told to hold everyone else to.
All right, so do a 2-year thorough investigation into it, wield the banhammer like there's no fucking tomorrow, and sack everybody who gets caught up with it. And, yeah, let's go again. Every couple of years, wield the banhammer and sack those guilty of it. But I don't think we need an arbitrary level of accountability stacked on the cops again.
I just think every once in a while, audit, if you find someone abusing their access like that, and I'm cool with erring on the side of the cop had a legitimate reason. But... you know, don't have a legitimate reason to search for another cop and then
I kind of like Ari's idea of just a periodic audit every once in a while. Just go in and look. It's like, you know what? Hey, Officer Jones, you got selected today. We pulled case file 12345. Here are your database lookups. Go in and justify for these for us real quick.
This is a reason, one of the reasons why I'd be a little hesitant about having a banhammer for this. Is that a lot of cops are proactive cops to where if they know Morps is getting out of prison tomorrow and Morps hasn't been on the street for 5 years and they've had a lot of access, like a lot of run-ins with Morps over the last 10 years until they locked him up for 5, and they know Morps is going to reoffend. It's only a matter of time. Do you think they should proactively look up where this guy's going to be next, you know, as to look for that sort of crime?
We already have regulations and laws that somewhat allow them to do that. If Morps is on probation, he has virtually no rights, and the cops are allowed to look in on him.
So his parole officer can crime walk in commit?
On we'll let you decide.
Fourth degree
you got 5
assault
years
and cruelty
for
to animals.
Threw a cat at somebody. That's awesome.
No, you beat somebody with their own chihuahua after it nipped you.
Nice! But, okay, I like this. Keep going.
So, Morps gets paroled after serving, I don't know, 6 months because everyone decided the chihuahua deserved to be beat against its owner's head for being a chihuahua, and the owner was an ass anyway. But while Morps is on parole, Morps' parole officer can actually walk into Morps' house at any time to see what Morps is doing.
What if
Morps has very
served,
few rights.
What if Morps has served time legit and he's not on parole, he's just being released?
Then Morps is a free citizen who has served his debt to society, and we should completely forget about the chihuahua and the man that was beaten.
I want to be proactive within my policing of my community as a law enforcement officer, and I know that this Morps is a habitual abuser of chihuahuas,
well,
and that he's going into a highly Mexican
crimes,
residential area.
I know that 100% of crimes are committed by people, so we need to look into everyone.
I don't know, dude. I've seen monkeys steal shit.
I know we got pretty far out of the tangent of reality there. But,
no, it's fine. We're having fun.
You see where I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. I'm cool with some proactive policing, but proactive policing doesn't mean blanket warrant to search everyone, or even blanket warrant to search someone. They have to have a reason to look into Morps. A lot of people that they're looking into proactively are frisk at a drug corner.
But the occasional audit of just pulling a cop's, you know, here's all your lookups for the month, go through and justify them for me, that's not actually that difficult, especially depending on the standard you hold it to. Because I do a similar style of audit for my current job, where it involves I go through, grab the well, diff files in this case and go through and tie them back to the change tickets. It's not that hard.
I'd love to be in on this. Hey, Dave, can you just come here? On the 19th, when you went to EFAC, how is that security related within accounts?
And did you save the pictures, or am I going to have to get them out of your browser history? Now, that point aside, it's actually really easy to do. You sit down with the cop and say, "Hey, I need you to take half an hour, go through and justify all your pulls, all your database queries." And 9 times out of 10, that shouldn't be a problem, because what they're going to do is they're going to go through and they're going to say, just, you know, write the case number down next to all these, or if it doesn't have a case number associated with it, just give us a quick one-liner. It doesn't have to be detailed. It just has to be, you know, investigating for potential whatever. You know, it's not that hard of a thing to do. And if it's all legit reasons, it's fine. And of course they're going to bullshit and make up reasons to cover their tracks, but you at least have the paper trail showing you're trying.
And on some of the bullshit, this is only going to really catch blatant offenders.
Yeah. And those are the ones you banhammer like nobody's business, because they're the ones abusing their access.
I can get on board with that. I just hate to see another level of bureaucracy law enforcement has to leap through, when I'd have to say easily 8 out of 10 times they're doing the right thing by them and the community.
I'll say easy 8. Well, according to the stats that we're looking at, it's not 8 out of 10. 50% of their searches are personal inquiries. Now, they might not be doing anything malicious. They might just be checking, is so-and-so who's dating my daughter an asshat and a pedophile? But they're still not supposed to be using their credentials for that search.
Well, the really smart ones are going to, you know, get the passwords from the ones they don't much like, use those. Because,
Even search? I'm checking this license plate because it did a rabbit start, and I'm checking to see if this guy has any outstanding warrants, because I have legitimate cause to pull him over now.
Oh, sure.
And
that's the thing.
Me half the time.
If you're smart about this, then there's nothing to look into, because there's no evidence. There's nothing really there. And the ones who are going to do something blatant. Well, when I worked for a university, you know how many times I saw somebody who kept getting their IP address banned for doing stupid shit, and instead of just calling us saying, yeah, sorry, and getting unbanned, because the policy was pretty clear. All you had to basically do was call and say, I'm sorry on the first offense, and we'd turn your access back on. You know, I had like 6 dorm rooms that got blocked by one person, because they basically kept going in and borrowing other people's machines to do their stupid bullshit, and
or is this man clever and other people are stupid?
I think it's just a large collection of the stupid that's on college campus at this point in time.
Well, is he having freedom breeds stupidity? You know, the freer society is, the looser it gets with the idea of the law and what the law can do to it. So it does dumbass things like putting a kilo of weed in the back of the car instead of concealing it in a fucking box underneath it.
Freedom breeds stupidity, but capitalism acts as a filter. Though generally the stupid are not very successful.
The problem is welfare and freedom breeds lots of stupid.
There you go, Madman. You said it better than I could.
Because if you subsidize stupidity, you get more of it. Welfare subsidizes stupidity.
And on that depressing note, let's wrap that one up and go on to our first article here. It's from abcnews.go.com. Good lord, I wonder what ABC paid for go.com. I bet that was an expensive domain. Let's see. 3 conservative states are suing the Obama administration in an attempt to block the U.S. government from ceding oversight of some of the Internet's core systems. The Attorney General of Texas, Oklahoma, and Arizona said on Thursday, Attorneys General, I'll get it right eventually, I've been drinking, of Texas, Oklahoma, and Arizona on Thursday asked for a federal court in Galveston, Texas to keep the Commerce Department from relinquishing oversight of ICANN, or the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. Internet relies on the domain name system, blah, 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 blah. Texas Senator Ted Cruz and others opposed to the transition, which was approved by Congress in a temporary spending bill. I didn't know that. to keep the government running. They slipped it into the one of the damned funding bills, so they
Omnibus.
Basically had to pass.
They spended it. They stuck it in Omnibus.
It's either you pass this that lets us cede control of ICANN, or you shut down the government. And
so
everybody's
gun
shy about doing
that. It's constitutional.
The lawsuit says ceding control of ICANN violates the property clause of the U.S. Constitution, which restricts giving away government property. So, I didn't know that they had slipped into the omnibus bill.
Well, first I'm hearing.
That clause only prevents us from just arbitrarily giving it away. Congress can vote to sell or get rid of anything.
That's shitty, though, to slip it in the bill, slip spending bill like that.
Dude, they should slip in on the next spending bill getting rid of California.
just California,
it loose.
The state.
Just
here,
gone.
Mexico, you can have it.
Yep.
That would be funny.
Okay, so my biggest governmental problem with it has just been cleared.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
I mean, I think it sucks that we're getting rid of it, but the reason I think it sucks is we're giving it to totalitarian dictators that aren't good with free speech and human rights. And I like free speech. And even the ones that aren't too dictatorial, Germany is pretty much banning free speech.
Madman, was it you or was it RU who was telling me the other day that Germany's already lobbying to get it, to declare human rights in ICANN or some bullshit like that?
I told you that it's being brought before the UN. They're pushing that ICANN must recognize certain human rights. Now, the pushing, human rights aren't defined, and Germany, I was pointing out, along with Italy, have been pushing for the right not to be insulted or offended.
But, so here's the thing. ICANN is literally a database of who owns what IP addresses, and the top-level domains for .com, .net, .org, .edu, .gov, and a few others. What does any of that have to do with human rights?
The way they're going to use ICANN in this tool, and this works really well with the legislation going through Italy, especially if it passes, they can pretty much ban you or fine you for saying things that are offensive or hurtful. It doesn't matter if what you're saying is true. And the way they can use ICANN as a tool to prevent that, Galaxy 15 radio is really easy for a human to... or Galaxy15radio.com, whatever our URL is.
Yeah.
If you detach that and just have it as a sequence of numbers, we can still get to it. But it's really hard for humans to remember just those blanket sequences of numbers. And a lot of modern... surfing devices like phones and tablets, it's even harder to key those in sometimes. They just want the URL. So they're going to use ICANN to selectively edit the internet. If you say something that the thought police don't like, well, your easily remembered and easily keyed in URL is gone. They have to try to remember the number to actually find your website, if they ever knew it at all.
I just thought of a real good way of making shit tons of money. Oops.
What's that?
You need to register all these pornographic names in numbers. Like, so spell them out. Like, you know, boobs. You know, 80085.com. Things like that. Because if all these things start getting banned, you're going to be squatting on all the numbers to names of URLs.
Well, the problem is that's mostly already happened, are you? They're called domain squatters. it's already a problem business right there, because if you have a popular domain and you let it lapse by accident, somebody will snatch it up and demand $1 million from you to get it back. Stuck gross. That's not easier. You spelled that Galaxy 15 radio in lead speak.
Nice.
Like, yeah, cool. Not easier.
Nope. It's not easier, but yeah. Oh. Jokes
that's,
are gonna
that's
be
the
all
big
in
fear
numbers
when it comes
now.
To free speech and ICANN with the crap. The end. Although I have heard one really cool argument, and I'm anything controlled by the U.S. government has immunity from the Sherman Antitrust Act. So the reason we could have only one agency handing out domain names and keeping track of this is because it was being ran by the U.S. government. When it was ditched by the government, or when it is ditched by the government, antitrust lawsuits can be brought against it.
Well,
yeah.
If they go completely private, even if it's being ran by the UN, it has to be run by a government to be immune from the Sherman Antitrust Act. So if it's just the UN, UN isn't a government. So
yet,
I could go in and say they don't have the right to have a monopoly, and I can set up my own ICAM if I win the suit. So this could cause multiple internets.
Yeah, as long as they've got the same IP address system, though. Huh.
And why not use a standard? That IP system has already been set up. I'll just add numbers. So long as we're not conflicting and businesses have consulted with each other to prevent that from happening in the past.
Well, okay, I could see that. I mean, although technically the top-level domains were supposed to make that happen anyways, the whole .com, .net, .co, .uk, .whatever. Of course, now most major companies just buy up their name .everything, including XXX. That's probably the most important one to get, because that way they can control all the domains and point them back to their main website. But, ooh, that's a good point. Psychosis makes a good point in the chat room. I completely forgot about Namecoin. We've talked about it on the show before. So, yeah, it's a separate root DNS system entirely. So, yeah, we'll probably see more of that. Next article up is Death of the Linkage. Yeah, I did. From BBC. HP apologizes for ink blocking update. This is some bullshit. I don't think I talked about this on the previous deckings when it was going on, but let's see. A controversial firmware change made earlier this month meant HP printer owners using unofficial, usually cheaper cartridges discovered they didn't work anymore. A campaign calling on HP to reverse the move was launched, backed by rights group EFF. In a blog post, HP admitted it should have done a better job of communicating the change. An optional update that removes the restriction on unofficial cartridges will be available within 2 weeks. Yeah, and it's going to ruin your printer. What's it do? Well, it degrades your print quality by 90%, but it lets you use the cheap cartridges. The firm added... Okay, I added that. They did not say they were going to degrade the print quality. I'm just kind of expecting it. Yeah, they're very... Yeah, Sucker's got it right. They're very sorry they got caught. Let's see. The firm added, "We are committed to transparency in all of our communications, and when we fall short, we call ourselves out." But you didn't call yourself out. Like, the internet called you out. While making the apology for how it informed users, HP defended the move, saying it did so to protect them from counterfeit products. When ink cartridges are cloned or counterfeited, the customer is exposed to quality and potential security risks. What's the security risk of putting a secondhand ink cartridge in your printer?
Do they have enough memory to hold malware?
Yes, actually, printers do. That's
not printers, ink cartridges.
They've got that little chip on them, but not all of them even have the chip. But I don't know. I guess they could. That'd be hell of a mod.
There's circuitry on them, but I didn't think it had active memory. It was just pretty much on off for the toner spray.
Well, they've got a little microcontroller. Some of them have little microcontrollers on them for tracking ink levels, but I mean, you're talking about like a, you know, the 5-cent 8-bit micros that are in the disposable e-cigs and shit like that. I mean, these things are, you know, nothing. Microcontrollers, they don't... I don't know that there'd be room on there to really be a security risk. Compromising the printing experience, wrote John Flaxman, the company's chief operating officer. However, campaigns argued against HP motivations was less about security, because I'm not certain how it's a security issue, and more about protecting the large profit margins it adds to official ink cartridges. Security nightmare. As consumers took to online forums and social networks to express anger, the FF came down hard, saying HP had betrayed the public trust. Well, I'm not certain I agree with them on that one. I mean, it's just they're just trying to go for the same vendor lock-in as everybody else. I mean, by that measure, Apple has betrayed the public's trust, because it's a bitch to put things that Apple doesn't approve on a modern iPhone. You know, like a pair of headphones. Customers should be able to buy an HP printer without fear that the company will later place artificial limits on the printer's use, the group said. Windows 10, anybody? It would be a security nightmare for customers to avoid installing security updates. Oh, I gotcha. So the security nightmare is that people aren't going to install updates because they think it's going to break shit. Well, you know, my phone
fucked up
pretty good
today. That's already an issue.
That is an issue, because security updates break shit. My phone had a hell of an issue today. I thought about including the article, so I'll just talk about it. Oculus, because I played with Gear VR on my phone, Oculus put out an update today that was severely broken. It basically caused the phone to ramp its CPU up to 100% and constantly trying to keep reinstalling a component. And you know, the phone was unusable, and it ran the battery down within an hour of getting to work. And I'm sitting there going, what the fuck? And I broke out one of the fast chargers. The fast charger could not keep up with the power draw of the phone. Like, wow. I plugged it into the charger, and it started the battery going down less. And found the Reddit thread where people were talking about it and discovered it was the Oculus update, and you know, uninstalled all the Gear VR stuff from my phone, and it calmed down. And I think I've got like a 10% charge on it right now, because it's barely I mean, it ran the battery down. So
Zachros had a super crappy update. Pokemon Go updated him out of playing Pokemon Go.
Oh, you can't play with a rooted phone anymore on Pokemon Go? Well, I haven't played Pokemon Go since like that initial week I was playing with it, so I guess I didn't really notice. Anyways, customers should be able to buy HP printers without fear the company will place artificial limits on the printer's use, the group said. It would be a security nightmare for customers to avoid installing security updates for fear of unwanted and unannounced feature changes. Windows 10, anybody? It also called on HP to explain how it planned to tell customers they may have been affected by the revised update.
Here's how right we now, tell them. You couldn't use your printer. Just been informed. I think they knew. That's why HP is putting out the update. Someone figured out their printer stopped working.
Right now, the FF said the vast majority of people who use the affected printers likely do not know why their printer lost functionality, nor do they know that it is possible to restore it. That's actually true. A lot of people, when their printers break, they're so cheap, they just throw them away and go buy new ones. All of those customers should be able to use their printers free of artificial restrictions, not just the few who've been following the story. So, not that it's that hard to find with a Google search, but anyways.
You don't know about it, you're not looking for it.
That's also true. You just think, oh, well, I guess it finally kicked the bucket, and then go buy a new one.
And how often is consumer news still consumer news these days? Instead of, you know, paid commercials.
Well, considering a lot of times it's cheaper to buy a new printer than it is to put ink in it, so.
But it comes with those nice new cartridges. I've done that a couple of times.
Dude, I used to do that too until we got looking at it and figured out that the cartridge that comes to the printer is only about half full. So, although, truthfully, if they treat the whole printer as disposable, I mean, why not? We've got disposable pens, we've got disposable everything else.
Especially if you can find somebody to buy the printer off of you for cheap. Yeah. You're getting a rebate.
Next article is from Ars Technica, and Static sent me this morning. A new Ethernet standard that allows for up to 2.5 gigabit over normal Cat5e cables has just been approved by the IEEE. The standard, formerly known as IEEE 1802.3BZ-2016, 2.5G/5G base T or just 2.5 and 5 gigabit Ethernet. Also allows for 5 gigabit over Cat 6 cabling. The new standard was specifically designed to bridge the copper twisted pair gap between gigabit Ethernet, which is the 1 gigabit that's on every piece of consumer gear these days, and the currently fastest standard for conventional Cat5e and Cat6 cabling, and 10 gig. So currently the fastest you get on Cat5e and Cat6 is gigabit. To get 10 gigabit, you got to be using GBIX or fiber channel or basically the wiring is different. It uses a different plug, and the 10 gigabit ports are bigger, more expensive, and generally the cords are more fragile because they're meant to be in data centers, so it's like, you know, you install it once and don't fuck with it kind of thing. So yeah. The 10 gigabit Ethernet, which can do 10 gigabit, requires special Cat 6A or 7 cabling. Rather impressively, work only began on the new standard at the end of 2014, which gives you some idea of how quickly the powers that be wanted to push this through. While Cat 6A and 7 are growing in popularity, the vast majority of homes, offices, and institutions still use Cat 5E or Cat 6, and an upgrade of the cabling would be very expensive. Yeah, anybody who's running wire on the walls knows what a bitch that is. A wired 1 gigabit connection is still fairly adequate for a single PC user, of course, but over the last few years, with the explosion of high-speed Wi-Fi, gigabit Ethernet is now one of the bottlenecks. For example, the top end of 802.11ac spec eventually calls for a total aggregate capacity of around 6.5 gigabit, even current consumer 802.11ac gear, which maxes out around 1.3 or 1.65 gigabit, is running up to the limits of Gig E. I got around this in my file server by putting a 4-port card in it, so I've just got 4 gigabit ports bonded on my file server.
I got around the cost of running wire in a house I was renting by finding a spool falling off a truck in the middle of the street.
Nice.
The way to go.
The new 2.5 gigabit, 5 gigabit base T standard will let you run 2.5 gigabit over 100 meters of Cat5e or 5 gigabit over 100 meters of Cat5-6, which should be fine for most homes and offices. So the standard also improves other nice-to-have features, including various power over Ethernet standards, handy for rolling out Wi-Fi access points. Physical layer of blah, blah, blah. Static sent me this story. I forgot to mention that. The physical layer of 2.55 is very similar to 10G base T, but instead of 400 megahertz of spectral bandwidth, it uses either 200 megahertz or 100 megahertz, thus not requiring a super high-quality mega-shielded cable. This is the same reason that higher bandwidth variants of DSL such as GFast only work over very short distances. The other differences from 10G base T include low-density parity checking rather than CRC8 error correction and PAM16 module rather than the DSQ128. So the chips are cheaper. Now that the standard has been approved, we won't have to wait long for enterprise 2.5 and 5 gigabit Ethernet networking gear. What's less clear is when you get consumer-grade gear. So, a couple of years, probably, it'll start getting to be a standard. I just bought a new router myself, so I'm kind of sitting there going, well, shit. but, anyways...
Is something I won't see for at least 20 years.
I don't know about 20 years, but it might be a little bit longer because it's got to roll out to consumer gear, and you know, the first gear that has it is going to be stupid expensive. So, and I guarantee 5 years from now it'll be standard on everything, I'm sure.
Question is, yes. Well, 5 years from now I'll probably buy it just because the shit I have will be breaking by then.
Yeah.
That's why most people would replace a router, is the old one's not working anymore, or it's not working well. Either, you know, the real problem a lot of the older Wi-Fi gear has is that there's too much shit in the spectrum and it can't cope with it as well. So,
who am I talking to? Oh God, there's so many people. Put me back in my happy box where there was only 5 of us.
Basically. I mean, I was helping my parents with their networking gear not too long ago, and it's like, I had helped them pick out a router a hell of a long time ago based on pretty much what I thought they were doing, and at the time, it worked great. And a couple of weeks ago, they're like, hey, we're having real problems here, and I go, look, they've hooked up, like, they've, like, quadrupled the amount of crap on the Wi-Fi between when we picked out that router and now, and it's like, well, why do we need a new router? It's like, you outgrew it.
But we started out with 2 tablets and a PC. There's now 30 tablets, 3 PCs, TV.
They started off with a laptop and then a desktop, and the desktop was on the wire. Now, it's like 3 tablets, the sound system, the television, a speaker set, a security camera system, a couple of laptops, 3 cell phones. It's just like, holy shit.
Yo, have you ever thought of logging into your parents' house and just randomly turning things on for them?
The last time I did that, I got smacked on the back of the head.
But they don't need to know it's you.
Hey, Morph well, didn't even to need to be
the,
fucking...
Admitting it was me was to stop the heart attack, so I mean...
Oh, okay. Like, I just wanted to log in and turn your television on, Dad. Showed you I could.
It's like, you know, Dad, I think you need to start investing in Ubiquiti, site routers until you look up the price of those things. But,
they're the ones you can walk through your house and the,
tell where you jump. Are by the signal? Yeah.
Yeah, it'll jump from antenna to antenna.
Time for an enterprise Wi-Fi app.
We actually have some Aruba gear at work that'll approximate your location in the building based on the maps and where the access points are. It's kind of awesome, actually.
Yeah.
So it's like, what's it tracking? Your cell phone? It's like, if you want to sneak around, leave your phone at your desk. Holy shit. But, all right, next article up is...
Noticed you were in the fourth floor bathroom for 4 hours and 15 minutes.
I had Mexican for lunch.
I had some jalapeno bacon sliders from White Castle, and the toilet paper stocked in that stall is amazing.
You and Jerry from accounting have been in the supply cupboard for a couple of hours now. Any reasons?
We were auditing things. Is counting the number of pubes on my ball sack while I smacked him with my penis.
Oh, fuck!
Oh, what a surprise. Another Apple story.
This one's funny, though. Apple likes to make boast about how secure its messaging app is, but the new revelation from The Intercept details how Apple kept a log of every iPhone user's texting contacts and that they will readily share that with law enforcement authorities when served with a court order. This isn't a Snowden leak, and nor does it imply or suggest Apple has access to the content of any privately sent messages. But they're not saying they don't have it.
They're willing to share the contents with the cops with a court order, which I'm completely fine with if they have the ability. But that is saying we have access to your shit, otherwise they can't give it to the cops. When the cops show up with a court order.
No, they're saying they know who you've been texting with, just not necessarily what your texts were.
Okay.
So, you know, as much as I like to bang on Telegram and Signal and WhatsApp, maybe they're not such a bad idea if you're on an iPhone. I've been meaning to play with Signal anyways. According to leaked documents, anytime an iOS user begins a text communication, Apple will take note of the target number and see if it corresponds to an iOS device capable of receiving a blue bubbled iPhone message. This isn't new information. What was previously not known is that every number Apple checks against the iMessage database is kept in a log for 30 days. The log also includes the date and time when you entered the number, along with your IP address, which could, contrary to 2013 Apple claim that we do not store data related to customers' location, identify a customer's location. Apple is compelled to turn over such information via court orders for systems known as PIN registers or tap and trace devices, orders that are not particularly onerous to obtain, requiring only the government lawyers represent they are likely to obtain information whose use is relevant to an ongoing criminal investigation. Cycross in the chat room is saying Moxie Marlin spike wrote Signal. I did not know that. That's I need to play with Signal. To be clear, the logs in question are not stored perpetually on Apple servers. To be contrary, they are removed and cleared every 30 days, barring, of course, a court order that would compel Apple to extend a particular log's existence. The underlying purpose of these logs, from law enforcement perspective, is that it provides them with a clearer picture of who a given individual may have been in contact with. In a broader sense, it helps law enforcement authorities establish a communication network for whoever they happen to be investigating. So, they know who you're talking to. They may not know what you're saying, but they know who you're talking to. So, Yeah.
Who uses Apple as a burner phone anyway?
You know, that's a fair point, actually. iPhone is a little expensive to just crack it in half and chuck it in the trash can when you get a text you didn't
pick. They're not going to get a lot of drug dealers. But didn't the San Bernardino couple use iPhones?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hipster terrorists do, but fucking anybody who's serious wouldn't.
I'd yell Allahu Akbar, but it's too mainstream, so I'm just going to say, fuck you bastards, and then I'm going to hit my bomb while I'm playing my vinyls.
I love that. Non-serious hipster terrorists. How many fucking people did they shoot?
Not that many.
Themselves. They skipped shooting everybody else and just shot themselves. I mean, yeah. Oh, wait, that's emo kids.
There's no gay nightclub, let's just say that.
Oh, okay, so they're not going to get high on the Allahu Akbar scale of success. They still successfully killed some people.
I'm kind of regretting that we don't give individual shows names now, because hipster terrorists would absolutely be the name of this episode.
Like, Madman, when you think about it, still, it's a Norwegian man still holds the highest score for FPS.
Yes.
Yeah, no Dirk has come close to that yet.
And he had all the penalties that come along with it. He was in a country that didn't allow the purchase of guns.
Yep.
And he couldn't have practiced very much. He grew up there.
When it comes to the terrorist scale, America's got a long way to go for homegrowns.
I don't know. We do our best work with bombs.
Yeah, Timothy McVeigh, granted.
Oklahoma City?
Yeah. I'll give you those.
Yeah, actually, this is why I'm never
invited to dinner parties, see?
Now that I think on it, wasn't the worst mass killing at a school done with dynamite?
Yep. Mass killing in the school history was done with dynamite.
Okay. Wasn't that the Chechen school?
No, it's actually in the U.S. We blow up our schools, too.
How many were killed in the Chechen terrorist attack?
I don't know.
That was early 90s. Or late 90s. That could be up there for one of the highest school killings, but that wasn't done by a school kid. That was done by outside forces.
Done by a Chechen?
It was done by Chechen rebels. Islamist rebels. They held the school for like 3 days.
Damn.
Was it in Donetsk or something? I don't know where it was.
But back to Apple. This is why you encrypt your iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, things like Signal suddenly are looking a lot more interesting. Let's see. Next article is from Ars Technica. Last week, security news site Krebs on Security went dark for more than 24 hours following what was believed to be a record 620 gigabyte per second denial of service attack brought on by an ensemble of routers, security cameras, and other so-called Internet of Things devices. Now, to be fair, trying to judge the size of a massive DDoS attack is hard. 620 gigabytes? If that's what was hitting the actual front end for the Krebs on Security website, you have to think there's gear, switches, routers, networks upstream from that weren't able to pass all the traffic through, because that's a lot of traffic. So it was probably larger than 620 gigabyte. Because if your upstream provider is only moving, I don't know, 100 meg or 100 gigabytes through a second, and somebody's throwing more than that at it, you're only going to measure 100 gigabytes, even if they were throwing twice that at it, you know?
Nice.
So, the attacks were first reported on September the 19th by Octave Kalba, founder and the CTO of OVH. The first one reached 1.1 terabyte per second, or terabit per second, while following was a 901 gigabit per second. Then, last Friday, he reported more attacks that were the same almost incomprehensible range. He said the distributed denial-of-service attacks were delivered through a collection of hacked internet-connected cameras with digital video encoders, each one having the ability to bombard targets with 1 megabit to 30 megabit. He estimated the botnet had a capability of 1.5 terabit per second. On Monday, Kapla reported that there's a B in there, not a P. reported that more than 6,800 new cameras had joined the botnet, and said further that over the previous 48 hours, the hosting service was subject to dozens of attacks, some ranging from 100 gigabit to 800 gigabit. On Wednesday, he said more than 15,000 new devices had participated in attacks over the past 48 hours. DDoS mitigation experts haven't confirmed the numbers, and Kapalov doesn't didn't respond to a request for an interview. Still, his account is believable and largely squares with what's being reported by Akamai, the company that until recently fought the record-breaking attacks directed at Krebs on Security. They actually kicked Krebs on Security off of Akamai because he was getting such a strong DDoS they couldn't deal with it. Indeed, Kapalov said evidence that suggests his network and Krebs on Security may be targeted by the same botnet. Even if they're the different botnets, the events over the past week are likely to set a new precedent for DDoS attacks. So let me stop with the article here and explain this. There are a vast number of IP security cameras out there that are just kind of sitting on the internet. I know you made a habit of finding them for a while there. Yep. And
now they've been joined with refrigerators and thermostats and all the minions of your household.
But basically, it's shit like routers and stuff like that. These little devices, printers that have, a crippled cell phone processor in them. That they've got an IP address. They're on the internet. They can generate a little bit of traffic, but they really aren't. You don't even think of them as being a computer because they're a camera, right? But you control them through a web browser or whatever. And a lot of people never bother changing or setting passwords on them, so it's not that hard to get code onto them.
And new espresso makers are good for this shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The one that Clooney advertises?
Fucking teapots with IP addresses. Like, why? Why does my refrigerator need a damned public IP address? But, some of them have it.
Yep.
So,
the power company can monitor its usage.
Oh, is that what it is? But, actually, power meters are another one, Mad Men. Now that you mention it, a lot of those are IP connected.
Yeah, so, the new smart e-meters.
You figure out the default password for the damned things. You log in, you upload new firmware, and now instead of that e-meter just reporting to the power company, it's also up there just sending junk traffic to websites to DDoS them. So, I mean, it's got to be an amazing number of cameras to pull it off, but, it doesn't actually take that much.
People have that much time on their hands.
That's true, too.
Right.
So, secure your shit, people. Change passwords. Don't put things on public IPs that don't need to be. And if your camera is running slow, maybe just, reset its firmware. Just go ahead and reset it.
Shut up, whoops. Mimsy.
Oh, am I a bad guy or a good guy? I keep forgetting.
Depends. You want to watch people's houses?
Are they hot chicks?
Don't know till you check at least once. And the odds are no.
Then but no, I don't want to.
Everyone still plays the lotto, dude. I
was gonna say if they're hot chicks, then yeah. But if they're not,
be surprised how the ratio of ugly people to good-looking people secure cameras morphs.
So, but yeah, once you figure out a way to run, a Python script across 50,000 video cameras. I don't know.
Knowing where they are first, that's the legwork.
Yeah, but you can automate that shit too. You just go on Shodan and look it up or figure out a scanner like the guy with the FTP servers last week. Oh, RU wasn't here last week.
Nope.
Oh, he missed that
tool. I haven't
listened
to that show yet either.
Oh,
there's a tool that will give you a hard on for days.
I'll have to go back and listen.
You're gonna need new pants.
Cool.
So
I'll listen to the show later.
Next one up, or last article up for tonight, let's see, there's that. Yeah, I'll get you the links after the show, because you'll take two looks at those and just go, oh, fuck. This is just cool. It's from hothardware.com. One common complaint in the 21st century is that nothing is built to last. Even complex, expensive computers seem to have a relatively short life nowadays. One computer in a small auto repair shop in Gdańsk, Poland, however, has survived for the last 25 years against all odds. In January, a photo was taken by Facebook user Bartek for the page Retrocompt Loader. The picture recently resurfaced on Commodore USA's Facebook page. The computer claiming victory here is a Commodore C64C that has been balancing drive shafts nonstop for a quarter of a century. The C64C looks like it would fit right in the scene from Fallout 4 and even has survived a nasty flood and pigeon poop. And it's an original Commodore monitor, and it's a C64 that looks like mechanics have worked on it. I mean, it's just covered in shit. This Commodore 64 contains a few homemade aspects, however. The computer uses a sinusoidal waveform generator and a piezo vibration sensor in order to measure changes in pressure, acceleration, temperature, strain, or force by converting them to an electrical charge. The C64C interprets these signals to help balance the drive shafts in vehicles. Commodore itself made many changes to the C64 hardware during its lifespan. The motherboard was redesigned twice. They changed the position of chips. This was done during the 1980s to compete with 16-bit computers. Blah, 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 blah. Best-selling computer of all time. Nothing's outsold it. Ran the Commodore kernel, BASIC 2.0 GEOS. Could use ROM cartridge, floppy disk, cassette player. Two CIA 6526 joysticks. To date, there are almost 100 record enthusiasts that still develop new hardware for the Commodore 64. I have three of them in a closet. This actually doesn't surprise me at all. Because the Commodore, in all honesty, a Commodore 64 from the 80s has more in common with a modern Arduino than it does a modern PC. And the reason for that is the user port. The Commodore 64 is an 8-bit computer. Its floppy drive was also an 8-bit computer. You basically networked to your floppy drive to copy shit off of it. It had a display, it had keyboard interface, but there were all kinds of projects out there using the user port because you get direct volt control voltages off of it. So you make up a little custom hardware, send it to it, get numbers back off of it. And actually, you know, I think it had about the same horsepower as a modern Arduino. So it's kind of interesting to me, but it doesn't surprise me that you still see them kicking around in these old projects, because if you've ever taken one apart, it's got that 1960s radio vibe where the tracks are huge. It's none of this surface mount stuff, because I guess most of it wasn't available at the time when they were making these things. You know, it's all dip chips and resistors, and you can actually pop the thing open and take a soldering iron and a multimeter to it and fix it when it breaks. I mean, you can do that with a you can technically do that with the modern surface mount board, but you need a freaking microscope and a hot air rework and a donor board to get parts from, because you can't just get on, you know, Mouser and order whatever value resistor, you know.
Yeah.
So it is awesome that it's still alive and kicking after having the shit beat out of it. But anybody who's ever worked on these things knows, as long as you don't, you know, shock them, you don't blow a chip in them, they last for fucking ever. Two of the three I have in my closet still work. The third one I bought broken because I was planning on harvesting the SID chip out of it. And I just never got around to it. Psychro says a good point in the chat room. Yeah, it's probably the most secure computer you've ever seen, because I've hooked a Commodore 64 up to the internet before. The network card had more processing power than the fucking computer.
Hey, that thing was able to run a Windows virus. Do not knock that Commodore.
That was, oh god, I should tell that story. So this was back when I still owned a house before I moved to take a new job. I was actually working on the Commodore 64 that I had gotten on the internet, because the room with the TV in it that it would work on was away from my regular workstation. So I was in there playing around with it. I'd gotten into one of the chat rooms. I was actually talking with one of the guys about music equipment in the Colossal Cave Adventure Online. C64 discs that I had gotten the C64 online with, and I got one of those, you know, hello, this is from Microsoft, you have a virus, scam calls. And, you know, me being me, I can't help it. So, oh, yes, sir, your computer has a virus. Which computer, dude? I've got like 30 in the house right now. Oh, the one you are sitting on, sir. The computer I'm sitting on right now. Oh, yes, sir. Really? Oh, yes, sir. A Commodore 64 has a Windows virus. Oh, yes. He didn't know what it was. I want to meet the guy who wrote that virus. Holy shit! he got confused and eventually got mad and hung up on me because he didn't get the joke. He didn't know what a Commodore 64 was.
Dude.
But, yeah, I need to dig those out. I've got a 3D printer now, so I can make my own cartridges for it. Didn't have that at the time. Oh, I just mentioned 3D printing. Drink. Anyways, I don't know. Any thoughts on this? I just thought it was cool.
That's cool. Getting your money somebody's out locked. Of a PC.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of other ancient hardware that should be fucking replaced. So, there are some updates going on at my place of employment. And they're still not changing the back-end software, I don't believe.
Mm-hmm.
They're just posting another bit of wallpaper over it.
Well, so given where still... you work, the back-end software is probably still running on an AS fucking 400.
Yes. And the training course I just took kind of admitted that.
You still have to use a 3870 terminal emulator?
Yep.
Damn! Ah.
It's still doing a 3870 terminal emulator, except they're, like I said, they're plastering another layer of wallpaper over it effectively, trying to make it look more modern, because people were saying this looks dated. And the reason it looks dated is because it's fucking dated. I'm using an emulator on a modern system to look at something that was designed probably in the 50s and 60s and ran in the 60s and 70s. It's a terminal interface.
I think I got the numbers on that wrong. I'm now blanking on the proper AS400 terminal emulator from IBM. Fuck, I feel bad now. I forgot the damn numbers. 3220? No. Shit. Well, I feel stupid. I'm sorry. I've forgotten the name of the specific terminal you use with an AS400.
Yeah, I don't care. Until we can find people that remember COBOL, the financial systems are not going to be full. Or the downtime.
Smoke weed every day.
Yeah, let's move on to this. Yo! Hadouken! All right, first thing I have up in Digital Dojo tonight is a little add-on for the Windows Firewall called the Windows Firewall Notifier. It is an extension to the embedded Windows Firewall and offers real-time connections monitoring, connection map bandwidth usage monitoring. The author has given the code to the community. The last update was from earlier this month, so it is actively developed. And requires Vista SP2 or later, so Windows 7, 8, 10, Microsoft Net 5.2. Do not ask for a Windows XP version. It relies on features introduced in Vista and then basically wouldn't work. Basically, it's a little snitch for Windows. It shows you every connection going on your PC, tries to do some geolocation mapping, shows you the bandwidth various applications are using, what adapters are doing what, the status of your Windows firewall. It's just a nice little free project for seeing what the fuck your machine is doing.
That's cool.
Yeah, nice little program of relying on the Windows firewall. And then finally, for those of you like myself who missed DerbyCon this year, I was actually in Louisville during DerbyCon, but I didn't get tickets, so I didn't get to go. But I was in Louisville, so I was kind of there. I met several people in restaurants. I'm like, oh shit, guys, what? You know, you see everybody walking around in the DEF CON shirts with the badges, like, hey guys, what con's going on? DerbyCon, fuck. Missed it.
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't get tickets, so I'd kind of forgotten when it was. But anyways, Iron Geek has, of course, like always, posted up all the videos. Five tracks with multiple days of videos. Lots of content here. Yeah, definitely worth checking out. And that's really all I got. So, listen to the stream while I was working on it. Pure decking every Thursday. Unless the Windows updates horks up the broadcast box, which I honestly thought was going to happen tonight, but we recovered. So, yeah. I don't know. Madman, you got anything before I close out the show?
Nope.
Are you? You have anything before I close out the show?
I'm pretty good.
All right. Well.
Emergency. Emergency. Emergency.